Today, we are continuing on in our study of Joshua. Last week, we discussed most of chapter 5, and we talked about the connection between the circumcision and the Passover and the entry into the land of Israel. But we did not complete chapter 5. The end of chapter 5 is a whole different story, and that's what we're going to do today. It's a short story, but it has quite a lot of significance. So, we'll start from verse 13 in chapter 5. And it came to pass when Joshua was near Jericho, he looked up and saw a man standing before him, drawn sword in hand. Joshua went up to him and asked him, "Are you one of us or of our enemies?" He replied, "No, I am captain of the Lord's host. Now I have come." Joshua threw himself face down to the ground and, prostrating himself, said to him, "What does my Lord command his servant?" The captain, the Lord's host, answered Joshua, "Remove your sandals from your feet, for the place where you stand is holy." And Joshua did so. So it's actually, it's a very significant story. We are right here. Joshua is standing right near Jericho. The next chapter, chapter 6, is going to have the actual conquest of Jericho. And we already know that the battle for Jericho is a completely miraculous battle. They, you know, they circle the walls, they blow the shofar, and the walls come tumbling down. And I don't know how many of you know, I remember a song when we were growing up, "Joshua fought the battle of Jericho." So it was such a miraculous, a memorable victory that there's even a folk song written about it. So this is about to happen. And just before, we have clearly a supernatural event. Okay, Joshua sees a man, but then it turns out he's not a man. Joshua sees a man and he really doesn't know, are you with us or against us, is essentially what he's saying. Are you an Israelite or are you a Canaanite? And of course, at that point, he identifies himself actually as an angel when he's a captain of the Lord's host, as my translation is, and I'm not sure I like that translation, but it's good enough. He is basically an angel. He is an angel of God coming to Joshua. Joshua immediately understands this, and he prostrates himself. And then this angel says to him, "Remove your shoes from your feet, for the place where you stand is holy." Okay. Two images. The beginning of one thing I forgot to say, the man, what is he doing? He's standing and his sword is outstretched in his hand. Now, these few verses actually echo word for word two different places in the Bible, one that came before and one that came after. Okay, so I would like to focus on each of these and see, by comparing the two instances, what are we learning about what's happening here? So the first is in verse 13, where we see a man standing before him, drawn sword in hand. Okay, now, I don't know how many of you are, you know, remember this or can draw it off the top of your head, but when I hear this verse, I immediately think of the verse in Chronicles. If you want to take a look, Chronicles 1, 1 Chronicles chapter 21, verse 16. We're talking here, just to give the background, we're talking here about King David. King David has just sinned. King David appointed, and by the way, the exact same story with minor differences is given to us in 2 Samuel chapter 24. The same basic story. One of the minor differences is this description of the angel that we are about to read is not in the story in Samuel, which is why I'm focusing on the story in Chronicles. Okay. David looked, okay. So he sins, he conducts a census of the nation, and we are not supposed to count the people of Israel. And in fact, we know this from the book of Exodus, when God says, everyone should give a coin. And then when you count the coins, you will in effect know the numbers of the adult men in Israel. And David here doesn't count coins, he counts people. And so he has sinned and he realizes it. But this angel comes, and the angel is actually meting out the punishment of God for this sin. That's the background, okay? And then, so the verse before, verse 16 and verse 15, God sent an angel to Jerusalem to destroy it. But as he was about to wreak destruction, the Lord saw and renounced further punishment and said to the destroying angel, "Enough, stay your hand." The angel of the Lord was then standing by the threshing floor of Arnon the Jebusite. Okay? And then we have this verse. David looked up and saw the angel of the Lord standing between heaven and earth with a drawn sword in his hand directed against Jerusalem. Now in Hebrew, v'charbao shlufa biyado, those are the exact same words. And the sword drawn in his hand, the only two places where we have these exact same words, here and in our story of Joshua. There are a few differences, of course. In this case, we have the extra few words directed against Jerusalem. So it's not just an angel standing with a hand outstretched with a sword in it, but it's actually outstretched over Jerusalem or against Jerusalem. And the other difference is that the other significant difference here is that here in Chronicles, David sees right away that it's an angel. He sees an angel of God. And in fact, to reinforce that, scripture tells us standing between heaven and earth. So it's clear that this is a supernatural body who has been sent from heaven to earth. He's standing between heaven and earth. So that is very much something that David sees right away. Whereas in the case of Joshua, what does he see? He sees a man. Of course, he's seeing an angel. But he doesn't realize he's seeing an angel until he asks him who he is. And then he says, "I am a captain of the host of the Lord," which means I am an angel. So these are differences. But again, the fact that we have the exact same language, there's no question it is telling us something. Okay. Now, what exactly happens in the story of King David? Because I like to go to the story of King David, which is a more fleshed out story, and it's something we relate to a little bit more easily. And then that can teach us something about Joshua, because it's clear. I mean, Chronicles was written way after Joshua, but it's clear in choosing to use the very same words, there's a message here that is something that is instructive for us that we can learn about, also to reflect back to Joshua. So what's actually happened? As we see, as I explain, this is coming right on the heels of punishment, divine punishment to David and to the nation. It's actually David's fault, King David's fault, but the nation is punished. I'm not going to get into that issue. That's one day maybe we'll learn Chronicles and we can discuss that, but that's not our issue here. But what happens immediately after this is that David gets the order from this angel. He is right there at the threshing floor of Arabna or Arnon. It's written in two different ways. The Jebusite who owns the threshing floor, which is actually the Temple Mount. And so it is here that King David is given the instruction to purchase this threshing floor. And what happens next is that he purchases this Arabna wants to give it to him for free. He says, no, I am not taking anything for free. He purchases it and lays the foundation for building the temple. God has already told him, you can't build the temple. It is your son Solomon who will build the temple. But here he purchases the threshing floor and he builds an altar. And then he brings sacrifices on this altar. So basically what we have here is that following this vision, following this appearance of the angel with his sword stretched out across Jerusalem, what we're seeing is that the place, there's some kind of designation or sanctification of the place. Okay, the sword is the angel is putting the sword across Jerusalem, and not just Jerusalem. He's standing in front of the threshing floor of Arnon the Jebusite, and it is that place that will become the holiest place in the world. It will be the place of the temple. And in that action, okay, The angel has essentially created a situation of sanctifying a place here in Jerusalem, of course. So if we're going to take this back to what can we learn from that and apply it to what's going on here in Joshua? So I think, first of all, we have this idea of holiness, of a place that is holy. If we look at really what's going to happen here in Joshua, first of all, remember this connection between a punishment for a sin, and the angel immediately stops the punishment at God's instruction. He stops using the sword, so to speak, to punish the nation, and instead uses the sword to sanctify Jerusalem. So there is this connection. And there is a bit of a similar connection here in Joshua, because this, we're sanctifying the place, we're sanctifying Jericho. Well, what does that mean? How is Jericho being sanctified? Well, as we'll read next week, and we will discuss extensively next week, the battle for Jericho, number one, is going to be a holy battle, a miraculous battle. It will be a direct connection of God basically waging the battle, not the nation. But also Joshua declares later on in verse 17 that this entire city will be a cherem. Now, let me just see how that is translated. If you look in, this is chapter six, verse 17, the city and everything in it are to be proscribed is what it says. Cherem. Well, the word cherem in Hebrew actually means, it can mean like a excommunication. It can mean destruction, okay? And it can mean, like it says here, prescribed for the Lord, but it really doesn't mean, it doesn't mean prescribed for the Lord. It will be explained in that way, but it means that it you have to lay hands off of it. It has to be set aside. That's what a cherem is. It has to be set aside. This entire city has to be set aside, and everything within it to God, okay? So in a way, what Joshua is going to say, and we'll see this next week, what Joshua is saying to them is, of course, that everyone is going to get killed, but also that all of the spoils, the gold and the silver and everything, they are not allowed to touch it because this has been set aside for God. Anytime something is set aside for God, it is essentially sanctified. When something is sanctified for God, you can't use it because it has been set aside in holiness for God. And so we have a similar type of thing, even though it's a big difference between Jerusalem and Jericho, we can definitely see in the same way this angel with his sword is sanctifying Jerusalem for the building of the temple, for the building of the altar, and the offering of sacrifices to God from that place. Similarly, when Joshua, the angel is sanctifying Jericho, he's saying everything that's going to come out of Jericho, that will be in Jericho, will be by God and for God. Okay, so in this, it's a sort of sanctifying kind of thing. If you will, I would say that this angel represents sanctifying of a place, not sanctifying of a person, sanctifying of a place. And in fact, in verse 16, we have, I'm going to discuss verse 16 in a different context as well, but one of the things that it says in verse 16, he says, remove the sandals for your feet, for the place where you stand is holy. Okay, so there we also have this idea that the angel says it very clearly, you are standing on holy ground. Okay, so there is a sanctification of the place. Now, I would like to kind of take this idea a little bit further. What does this mean? And I think this combination of, you know, comparing Jerusalem and Jericho, what are we seeing? Is there something... is there some idea behind this? And I would like to suggest that what do we know of Jerusalem? Jerusalem, in a sense, is a meeting place between man and God. What is the temple? A temple is the place where God rests his presence and where man can come and bring offerings, where man, in a sense, comes to meet God in the temple. So it is this idea of a meeting place or an entryway for man to enter into God's presence, okay? What is Jericho? The entry place to the land of Israel, okay? So in a way, Jericho, in the same way Jericho becomes the entry for the nation to the land of Israel. The temple in Jerusalem will become the entry place for the nation to the presence of God. Okay, and I think that's very interesting connections, because the connection between the nation of Israel and the land, and the nation of Israel and God, is actually this whole triple kind of relationship that we see beginning all the way back in Genesis 12, when God promises the land to Abraham and to his children. We already then have a relationship between God, the nation, and the land. And this just reinforces that we're talking about a very similar situation. Now, there's another example that I would have here about what this means, the holiness of the place, but I'm going to hold off on it until we explore more deeply the next verse that I wanted to focus on, and that's verse 15. Again, the angel says to Joshua, remove your sandals or remove your shoes from your feet, for the place where you stand is holy. Now, again, this time before, in a previous place, in a previous book, we have again in Hebrew, the identical words. And in that case, we're talking about Exodus chapter 3. Okay, you go to Exodus chapter 3, verse 5. Moses meets God for the first time. Of course, we're talking about the story of the burning bush. And God says to Moses, again, chapter 3, verse 5. And he said, God, do not come closer. Remove your sandals from your feet, for the place on which you stand is holy ground. The only difference between these two places is that with Moses, it says holy ground. And in Joshua, it just says holy, which in my book is not very significant. Okay, exactly the same. Remove your shoes from your feet. And it's this exact same words are chosen. There's different ways you could say the same thing, yet it's the exact same words. There is no question here that the angel says to Joshua, remove your shoes from your feet, for this is holy ground. And he says that he quotes the very same words that God says to Moses, that he is conveying a message to Joshua, and a message to all of us reading this centuries later. What was going on when God made this statement to Moses? Okay, essentially, this is something that we call in Hebrew an hakdasha. We use the same word as we use for holy, sanctification, but in this case, it's a sanctification of a person, not a sanctification of a place. It is, and when God sanctifies a person, what we really mean is that God appoints a person for a holy mission. That's what's going on every single time God sanctifies a person. And we have a number of examples of this, but let's just go back to the first one we talked about, and that was in Exodus, where God sanctifies Moses. What actually is he doing here? He appears to him. You have a burning bush. It's a supernatural event that Moses is witnessing, at which point we have that instruction, take off your shoes. It's a holy place. And what follows right afterwards in verse 10, now, come, therefore, I will send you to Pharaoh, and you shall free my people, the Israelites, from Egypt. This, of course, is Moses's holy mission. He will be sent by God to redeem the nation of Israel from Egypt, from Pharaoh. And so this designation of Moses that takes place at the burning bush is a designation of Moses for a holy mission. Now, of course, with Moses, and it's with all of God's appointees in this way, it's not just one mission, it's one, let's say, overarching mission, okay? But this is not just, you know, I'm giving you a job, you know, go do it, and then goodbye. This becomes the overarching mission of that person for the rest of his life. Okay, and we know Moses' whole mission is to redeem the nation from Egypt and, of course, bring them into the land of Israel, which is part of the same thing, liberating the nation out of Egypt into the land. Just that this little bit he wasn't able to do. He brought them up to the entrance to the land, but he could not go any further. I think it's very significant that here, what's happening here is that God is giving the same holy appointment to Joshua. What is his holy appointment? What is he supposed to do? He is supposed to look at chapter 6, verse 2, the Lord said to Joshua, see, I will deliver Jericho and her king and her warriors into your hands. And of course, this is not just about delivering this one city, but what Joshua's holy mission is to capture the land of Israel for the Jewish people. And that will be his mission from now until the end of his life. And or at least until the end of his rulership. We don't know that much about what happens at the end, but he mostly is involved with this until very close to the end of his life. It is definitely a holy mission. And here, I think we could say we already saw earlier a few different sorts of verses that showed that God was appointing Joshua. It was important for God to appoint Joshua and give him the authority of Moses. We have him, you know, at the very beginning in chapter one, he's saying to Joshua, be strong and brave, be strong and brave, be strong and courageous. Okay, so there's encouragement there for what is clearly his mission. And we have then something we discussed a couple weeks ago in chapter 4, verse 14. On that day, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, so that they revered him all his days as they had revered Moses. So, of course, God engineered this so to raise up Joshua so that he would be indeed an important leader in the eyes of the nation, and they would revere him as they had revered Moses. And what we've seen all along from the beginning of Joshua up until now is that Joshua is stepping into Moses' shoes, and it's very important that the nation give him that same kind of respect. What's different here is that this is the actual appointment. It's not encouragement. It's not saying, okay, now the nation sees you. You have the reputation. You're respected and honored. But here we have the actual appointment. And that's really the significance of the angel saying to Joshua, take off your shoes. An exact quote from the actual appointment of Moses. It's not just to tell us, guys, pay attention. This is the appointment. This is it. But it's also a direct quote from the appointment of Moses. One more way that the Bible reinforces for us that the same way that God appointed Moses, he is now appointing Joshua. And they both have very holy missions. And if basically Moses's mission was initially to not only take them out of Egypt, but to bring them to the land of Israel, we can now see Joshua's mission, which is to bring them into the land of Israel and conquer the land, is a direct connection. It's a direct continuation of Moses's mission. Okay, so that I would put together in that way. Now I just want to go back to, we talked before. Okay, I mentioned that these words, the place on which you stand is holy, that this serves in this verse in chapter 15 as part of the actual appointment of Joshua, because it refers us back to what was going on when God appointed Moses, the place upon which you stand. But it also refers to what happens at the initial verse in chapter 13, in verse 13, where we're talking about the angel putting his arm out with a sword as a way of sanctifying the place, sanctifying Jericho. And that, of course, we have here very clearly, the place that you are standing is holy. Now, I would like to connect that idea, the place you are standing with holy, with this comparison that we have just made between Joshua and Moses. Not just that a place is holy, and that what both Joshua and Moses are supposed to be doing is carrying out a holy mission. I would take this one step further, and I would say what both Joshua and Moses are doing is carrying out a holy war. Okay? Now, you may say, a holy war? What does the Exodus from Egypt have to do with war? It was a miracle. It was, the Red Sea and plagues and all that kind of stuff. How would you call that a war? But I would refer to you in Exodus 14, verse 14. Okay, just before they're about to go into the Red Sea, Moses says to the nation, start reading from verse 13. This is Exodus 14, verse 13. But Moses said to the people, have no fear, stand by and witness the deliverance which the Lord will work for you today. For the Egyptians who you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will battle for you. You hold your peace. Moses is talking about the miracle of the parting of the Red Sea and the deliverance of the Israelites from Egypt into liberty, into coming under the protection of God, etc. And he uses the word battle. It is a holy war, except that God is waging that war, not the nation. Similarly here, Joshua is clearly about to go into battle. And after Jericho, there will be battles. Some have some miracles, some have no miracles, but they're clearly regular battles. There's going to be armies and there's going to be weapons, okay? But this first battle, opening battle of the conquest of Israel, there is really no battle. It too, like the parting of the Red Sea, is a holy war in the sense that it is God who's going to be waging that war. They will circle around Jericho, the walls will fall down, and they will go in and take over. There's a bit of fighting perhaps or whatever, but the way it's presented in scripture is that it's really a holy war, not just a holy purpose, but holy in the way that battle is actually waged. Okay, I just want to go back now and just to kind of round out the discussion. We talked about sanctifying a person, this idea of a holy appointment. I want to just reference other prophets, really, for the most part, that have what we see. And there's other examples. I just chose the three biggies, okay? Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel. And these, of course, all have a special type of ceremony of sorts or a special kind of sanctification where God appoints them to be his prophet. Now, Jeremiah, even though he's chronologically after Isaiah, I'd like to start with Jeremiah because this one is a little different. Okay. God says to him, Jeremiah, first of all, we have specifically the word of sanctifying used here. Jeremiah 1, verse 5. Before I created you in the womb, I selected you. Before you were born, I consecrated you. I appointed you a prophet concerning the nations. So we have here very clear language that in sanctifying the prophet, in appointing him for his mission, this is something that goes together. It's the sanctification of the person that creates the mission or the appointment. I appoint you a prophet concerning the nation. Now, we do have right after this, these weird spiritual visions that Jeremiah has that are then interpreted for part of the message he's going to take to the nation. But here it's very clearly said, this idea of a sanctification and the appointment to be his prophet, to be God's, to be, you know, fulfilling God's mission. We do, although, have in verse 9, he talks about God touching my mouth. So there's a certain physical element here to sanctifying and appointing Jeremiah. Isaiah and Ezekiel are very, very similar. Both see these very supernatural visions that take place up in the heavens with angels and all kinds of beings, very, very difficult to understand. But in both cases, those visions become part of this sanctification appointment process. If we look in Isaiah 6, chapter 8, when I heard the voice of my Lord saying, whom shall I send? Whom will go for us? And I said, here I am, send me. And he said, go. Okay, go. Say that to the people, go. That's the most important thing, go. And so here we have this definite setting up of Isaiah to be God's messenger, God's prophet to the people. And in Ezekiel, we have something very similar. Ezekiel chapter 2, chapter 1 is again one of these very supernatural visions of all kinds of heavenly beings. And then in chapter 2, Ezekiel says, as he spoke to me, a spirit entered unto me and set me upon my feet, and I heard what was being spoken to me. He said to me, O mortal, I am sending you to the people of Israel, that nation of rebels, etc. So in these cases, we have examples of different kinds of sanctifications, of different kinds of God appointing the prophet for a holy mission. But what we have here in Joshua, it has a lot of similarities to those things. We have a vision, a supernatural vision, like he sees this angel with the sword. Okay, that clearly is similar to the other ones, but the resemblance, and in Moses also a burning bush, it's a miracle. It's a very spiritual, supernatural kind of vision that they see. But the way the appointment, the sanctification of Joshua and Moses are linked so closely. It's very clear that in addition to just saying Joshua, like all these other people, have received a holy mission, it's that Joshua is continuing the mission that was originally given to Moses. That's today's. That's now we finished chapter 5 with those few verses. I'm sure there's lots of other things that people can say or think about them. But if you want to open your mics and make a comment, this is certainly an opportunity to do that. Yes, Rukama.
This is Jim in Orlando. First of all, I want to say this has got to be the fastest half hour in the entire week. I really enjoy this. Secondly, I may have missed something, but at the beginning you said there was two other examples of the sword.
There are two examples. One is here in Joshua and the other is in Chronicles.
Oh, okay. I thought there was two in addition to Joshua.
No. Those are
I was thinking about the Garden of Eden sword, but okay. All right.
That's a different kind of sword. And we don't have an angel holding it. That one is suspended in heaven. It's suspended somewhere.
Alrighty. Thank you.
Okay, Rukama, yes, you were going to say something.
Whenever I read that when they crossed the Jordan to come in, that they came to the Promised Land. But the Promised Land is the borders are much more than that. This is not the Promised Land. It's in the middle of the Promised Land. So why do they always say?
Okay, so I think we have here, and this is something I've also heard from other rabbis, and discussing this issue, what is the difference? Because clearly, first of all, God promised the land to Abraham, and he gave very different definite borders, and the eastern border goes all the way to the Euphrates, which is in Iraq today, okay? Now, that's not just Jordan, it's Iraq. It's really far out there, okay? Now, the truth of the matter is, even in the time of Moses and Joshua, just before they enter the land, they've already conquered parts of the eastern part of the Jordan River, which is Jordan of today, a bit of Syria as well, the Golan Heights. You know, these are areas that are to the east of the Jordan, and these are where 2.5 tribes settled. And yet, recall that Moses was part of those battles. He was not able to enter the land of Israel in the sense he wasn't able to cross over into the land of Canaan, which is west of the Jordan. So while the God has promised a larger territory to Israel, the part that's west of the Jordan has a very special level of holiness. It is much more in possession of the Jewish people. And in fact, remember, Moses was not happy when Reuben, God, and the whole idea to conquer the Amorites and the Bashan was part of God's plan. And you would think then, so what's the big deal when Reuben and God said, well, let's stay here. But it clearly did not make Moses happy. A rabbi that I learned from very often once explained it in this way. And he says, there's a difference between the land that is actually the land that became the land of residence of the nation of Israel and the land under the influence or under the control of the people of Israel. And this also may fit in with these more greater boundaries that take us into Egypt and into Iraq, okay? That the area that is for the main area, the central area where the nation of Israel will live and develop and build its cities, that's always the land of Canaan. That is west of the Jordan River, okay? However, the areas beyond that, even though they may be populated by other nations, that ultimately they will become part of what will be known as the Israelite Empire, okay? Under our influence, under our control, and ostensibly under the rule of God, in the sense that those nations will ultimately also recognize God. Okay.
Yeah. And King David actually got from Nahar Prat until, so he did conquer a bigger part of the
a lot province. Of it. Yes. He did conquer a lot of it, but didn't hold it for long. And even in Solomon's time, and Solomon was such a great, an enormous, ruler and had control. And yet he gave some of the cities over to Tyre, to the, what is today Lebanon. So,
Okay. Another thing that I thought, is it any connection that when the Kohanim are blessing, they're taking off their shoes?
Ah, that's very good. Yeah. Also, I think in the temple, they didn't wear their shoes. And today when people go on the Temple Mount, Jews who go on the temple also take off the shoes. There's no question that it is a sign of holiness.
Today in the synagogue, when they are coming up to, they take off their shoes.
They take off their shoes, but I think that's reminiscent of the way the priests were in the temple, because the Temple Mount is a holy place. Okay. And there is this idea that you don't wear shoes in a holy place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any other comments? Okay. Well, have a great, Duncan, did you want to say something? Unmute yourself.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I'm interested in the holy ground. What constitutes a holy ground? And how does it last for? Jericho nowadays is controlled by Arabs, basically, isn't it? I've been in Israel twice and never been allowed into Jericho. So,
that's right.
So I'm asking
about holy ground. Unfortunately, holy ground doesn't necessarily mean that the Arabs don't get it temporarily. I mean, the Temple Mount is the holiest place in the world, and it is right now dominated by two mosques, okay? And the Jewish access to the area, unfortunately, is limited. But that doesn't mean it's any less holy. And of course, we look forward to a time where that will be redressed, and it will be Jews who have control of that area. But even so, it will be holy. What constitutes holy ground? God says. If God sets aside ground and said it's holy, it's holy. Now, where God said the ground was holy by the burning bush, we don't know where that area is. It seems that it's the same area that was Mount Sinai, okay? But we don't know where Mount Sinai is. So
yes,
it's
I can accept the ground at the burning bush because God gave that command. But
exactly.
In this case, it's an angel.
No, but it's an angel of God. It's very clear that it's an angel of God, and he's speaking the word of God. No question.
Okay.
Oh, no question. So the area of the burning bush, which became Mount Sinai, are holy for the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Two different incidents. Okay, they're holy for the burning bush, so they're holy for Mount Sinai, and then they disappear from significance. And in fact, I think it's no coincidence that today there's all these people with theories of where is really Mount Sinai. I don't think God wanted us to turn Mount Sinai into a sanctified area. It served its purpose and it's finished. Okay.
Yes.
The Temple Mount, in Jewish tradition, we believe that the sanctity of the Temple Mount lasts forever, even when the temple is not there. It is sanctified forever. Now, next week, we're going to discuss about the significance of the holiness of Jericho. And is that forever or not? But you're going to have to wait till next week.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
But the sanctity, it's the presence of the Lord.
Yes, but it's not just the presence of the Lord, because God might reveal himself to different people. That doesn't turn the land they're standing on into a place that's holy. But there's no question, God defines it, not us.
That's right. I agree.
God defines it, right. Anyway, have a wonderful, wonderful week. It is Hanukkah, so if any of you are celebrating Hanukkah, enjoy it. Eat your donuts. That's what we do in Israel. We eat donuts, and we have potato pancakes. Or anything else that's fried, and chocolate in the shape of little coins, and whatever it is, however you want to enjoy it. And if you don't celebrate Hanukkah, you can still eat chocolate.
Right.
That's right. I celebrate Hanukkah.
Bye-bye.
Happy Hanukkah, Hakol.
Yes, happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Happy Hanukkah.
I hope you enjoyed that video. And we'd like to be sure you're getting all of our video content. So just click on the subscribe button below, as well as on the notification bell. And that way you will have easy access to all our material. We look forward to staying in touch with you. God bless you and have a wonderful day.